You're listening to Safety Corner, powered by TCL and S1, for workers, by workers. Online and in-person health and safety programs and training available in 10-plus languages. Reach out to them at www.mys1.ca and DM them at my_S1 for more information.
Bon dia.
Bro, that's the best intro of all time.
It's the best. Everyone knows what happens. They know that we're about to rock and roll according like safety. Well, we got to talk safety.
It's Saturday morning. I'm feeling fresh. It's what, almost 8 o'clock in the morning?
This would always feel like any weekday morning, weekend morning. Construction. When's the last time you actually paid attention to Monday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday?
Every day's a Monday for me.
That's what I mean.
Every day's a Monday.
You're in construction, every day's a Monday.
Oh, yeah. Well,
it's so true.
And times that by being an entrepreneur or having your own business, and all of a sudden now...
You don't go to work, you don't get paid.
Pretty much. Got to feed my kids.
I know, that's construction, man, but we love it for that.
I do.
So
I don't need it again. I don't need an alarm clock anymore, which is nice.
I can't tell you the last time.
No.
That's back in your 20s and 30s, eh?
Man, even if I go to bed at like 2 o'clock in the morning, 5:30,
I'll wake up, but I don't know if I'm up.
No.
Your eyes are open, but I don't know if I'm up, man.
Yeah, no. But you go through the motions, though.
No, I'm trying to get 6 a day. That's what I'm trying to get to.
6 hours a day?
6 hours. So if I can get in by 10, I can wake up by 4. That's my 6. But if I go to 10:30, it's hard for me to get up at 4.
Oh, bro.
That's what I mean. 4 is, you know why? The world is quiet.
It's beautiful at that time, man.
You can clearly think. Yeah. Whether it's winter, summer, and I don't have kids, but I can only assume the kids are passed out at that time. So can clearly think.
Yeah, no. It's a nice little downtime of that that little window there. But I feel good waking up early, man. Yeah. Feels good. And
I feel old going to sleep at 10:30.
I went to bed, it was 9:30 last night.
That's a little too early for me, man.
Oh,
what time do you have lunch?
What time do you have dinner?
At lunch?
Right?
1 o'clock in the afternoon. After shuffleboard.
Oh, man, it's getting bad.
Let's go do shuffleboard and then let's go to sleep.
I'm easing into my old age, man. Easing in, man.
All right, what are we going to talk about today on Safety Corner?
You want to talk some politics first? And
what's going on?
I don't know.
I had an interesting show. Talked a lot about Ford and corruption and what's going on and the Ontario place and Nina Deeb. She's got a book that's coming out called 7 Minutes About the Housing Crisis, and she's an active person who goes to reading of bills and she speaks up. They don't take any of her comments. They dismiss her comments, and according to the Canadian system, you can complain, they don't have to listen. That's how it works.
I was just
part of politics you want to talk about?
Oh, how Canadian politics, how it's like a telenovela these days. But whatever.
It is so true, eh?
Right? Like a telenovela, man.
They're a bunch of characters.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for someone to be pregnant and she's white and he's white and a black baby comes out. That's what I'm waiting for.
It's too early in the morning for that one, man.
That's exactly. Listen, man, you got Carney going on Stewart's show. You got a Canadian corrupt businessman going on Stewart American show that has gone way too woke, in my opinion, and he's peddling him being the next leader?
Right. It's like a pylon.
Why?
It's like a pylon trying to argue that they're better than the bag of the hockey pucks. That's how I look at it, you know?
It's true.
You know, I'm a better pylon than that guy is. Oh, man, it's ridiculous. We deserve better.
But we don't do, like... I kept on asking her, and I keep on asking myself, and I know that other people have been on the show, and other people talk to me through DMs, and they're like, I'd rather just stay neutral. I'd rather just stay in the middle. Staying in the middle doesn't change this country for the better.
No.
You need to voice. You need to speak up, and you just say, listen, what they're doing is wrong and needs to stop. And then she was telling me about how there was a $30 million penalty if you renege on the Ontario Place deal. So it was supposed to be done, confirmed whether or not by December 31st of last year. They had a window to actually cancel the deal, right? They decided not to cancel it. So now as soon as you cross 31st and you're going into the new year, if you cancel this deal, you have to pay out $30 million tax dollars. Then she started breaking down the numbers on how much money the taxpayers are paying the Austrian company to build this spa, which is a casino basically. And the money
at Science Center or
at Ontario Science Center. So sorry, at Ontario Place.
Ontario Place.
And so we're giving them something $2 billion, and our return on investment is 190 or 183 million over 9 years. Who does this math?
Listen, one thing's for sure. If you go back in the history of Ontario and you look at some of these big failed projects.
LRT?
Well, yeah.
That's still failing. It's got the gold medal of failing.
No, I think the sale of the 407 may have been the biggest blunder in the history of Ontario.
She shared, did you know that if we don't have enough drivers on that 407, our tax dollars have to pay the surplus of missing funds?
Man, whoever this company is that got this deal to get the 407, they must be rolling in cash. Like, just like sleeping on
the... So everyone stopped using it because the fees went up. So you had driver going down, but we still have to commit to a certain amount of drivers on that highway. And if we don't get it, then we have to pay them.
There should be a website that just has all of these contracts open to the public for review.
There is, but you can review and that review won't do anything.
Well, hey, listen, put it out there. You know, it's taxpayer money.
But politics, what did you want to talk about? Politics,
safety-wise? I just wanted to point out Trudeau resigned, and I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
First of all, he didn't resign.
I get it. It's by the sounds of it.
He might as well just came out and just said, listen, oh, by the way, I'm gay. Not resigning. You're actually being fired. The Canadian people are firing you, and you are just you're showboating again now. You're performing again.
Yeah, he's
back in acting class, right?
He's the worst, man.
So I told everybody this is not a good move. Stop cheering. This is a bad move. Carney coming in is a terrible move.
Yeah,
it's 10 times worse.
It's pretty much just take off this guy and replace him with this other guy. No one's elected. This way you go, and now you got a new prime minister and...
not elected.
Yeah.
It's I like how the Americans are comparing it to the Biden Kamala thing.
It's exactly... It's the first thing I thought.
It's the same thing.
It's a switcheroo.
That's all it is. People never voted for Carney.
Yeah, no.
If Freeland gets in there, but all these puppets. Freeland,
that's another amazing one, man. How do you resign to your boss, and then your boss resigns, and then the following month after or whatever, you say, I'm going to take my boss's job. Can I
get the job, please?
Telenovela, man. It's just missing a soundtrack. But anyways.
Baby's black.
Politics in a nutshell. Telenovela. Canada's a disaster, and
I hope it gets better. I honestly hope it gets better.
Man, they're lowering the bar so much. I feel like there's only one direction to go now.
I had to leave a comment on LinkedIn. I saw a post today. Someone sharing a Carney post talking about how he's got connections to Maxwell Giselle, right? Then I said, listen, I just left a comment saying, listen, for you to become a politician in Canada, you need to have a prerequisite of being a criminal.
Yeah.
Look at it. Ford's a criminal in his actions. Trudeau's a criminal in his actions. Carney's a criminal in his actions.
One thing's for sure. I'm very disillusioned as a citizen and as a voter.
It's disappointing.
Yes. In the entire political landscape in Canada, whether it's provincial, whether it's municipal, you know, it's just all disappointing.
But they all point their fingers now. It's like that picture that you had that you posted that you did with Spider-Man.
They're
all pointing at each other. It's not my fault.
I don't know, man. You know what? In the end, it's the citizens that suffer. It's the workers that suffer.
Yes.
Based on these policies.
The economy.
Yeah. Even with the Trump tariffs thing. It's like, oh my God, we're going to retaliate. We're going to do this and we're going to do it. Oh, why don't you guys just fix the border?
Why don't you just do what he's doing? Why don't you just focus on Canada? Why don't you just make Canada a strong economic power?
It'd be nice.
We have so many resources here.
And for me, and I was talking with this with a friend of mine the other day. Like for me, man, I can live in a sleeping bag and eat canned tuna. I'm fine. You know, I can survive anywhere. I know it's not that I want to, right? But I can. You know, it's my kids. It's the future.
You worry about them.
I worry about
what are they inheriting?
And you know, like I'm actually contemplating, you know, do I need to pick up and get out of here? Do I need to find a better spot for my kids to have a better future? The same reason why a lot of people left Portugal to come to Canada, to have a brighter future. But if the future isn't bright here, you know.
Why stay?
Listen, I was born and raised here and I'm Canada through and through. Right. But it's tough to look at the future and say, you know, things are positive. They're not.
Yeah, so. I'm Canadian through and through too, but I still consider myself Portuguese as well. And I can't stand how Canada has been easily corrupted. And it just doesn't get fixed. Like, they just, no, more and more people get in there.
Worse.
They just keep on taking advantage of this. Like, she talked a lot about just how things are set up. So then if you do something and you fail at it, you're still rewarded, basically.
Yeah, that whole society thing.
Apply to your own business. What if you were running your own business?
No, the way I run my business is completely opposite.
Every blue-collar farmer, hard worker, if they ran it the way the government was running things right now, you wouldn't have a business. It would be taken away from you. So why are we not taking things away from them?
Listen, it's a lot of pushes, a lot of shoving. Let's see what happens.
I hope it changes. I don't have a lot of faith in it changing this year. I think that the Liberals are going to try to push it to 26, and that's going to be scary as hell, because then we have no real, we never had real leadership in the last 10 years anyway. But right now, this year, with the Americans going into, Trump going into power next week he's being.
So awesome.
I'm not disagreeing with it. I want to watch him deliver what he said he was going to do.
RFK is who I'm really waiting to watch, man. That, like, he, I feel that guy is coming. It's, well, it's funny, come out.
In 2-3 weeks, the FDA has said eggs are good for you now.
Yeah, no, there's been a lot of switches.
Second thing, no more red dye. And I just said, okay, fine. The red dye, I understand. And there's like 10,000 products that have red dye in it, right?
Sure.
So I said, that's fine. But
then yellow dyes and blue dyes and pink dyes.
But the companies are smart. You know that they changed the name fructose or sucrose or whatever it is. They made it a different name now that's more marketing friendly to the consumer. Still the same crap, but they just changed the name.
We probably should do a whole episode on food safety.
That's a different thing. I do it really simple. Eat meat, eat eggs, man. Simple as that. If you want to have an occasional cigarette or cigar, that's up to you. It doesn't matter, but you can drink a little bit of alcohol. It's fine. I wouldn't drink it every single day. That becomes a problem.
Manny's pyramid of food health. Steaks are at the top, whiskey's at the bottom.
Is. Of course there is, man. Red meat. You got idiots like Gates talking about fake meat and that, and cows are the problem. You know who's the problem? Gates, you're the problem. You need to be 6 feet under, man. Big, simple as that, man. Time. I can't wait. How old is he? Is he close?
That guy's going to live forever, man.
He'll just be replaced by a clone. Microsoft clone, man. All right, we're going to get, what are we going to get talking about?
Yeah, let's talk about safety.
What are we talking about?
Today we're talking about falls.
Falls.
Probably the easiest, the number one killer contravention of workers in this province.
I'm assuming ladders?
Falls from heights.
Just from heights.
Yeah. So falls are classified actually two different ways. Falls from heights and then falls from the same level. Like you're walking up the steps and you fall and hit your face, and you're walking on level ground and you trip and you hit your face, I guess. But so falls from the same level and then falls from heights.
So what's the number one thing that happens with a fall? Is it a head wound because you hit your head unprotected, or what is it? Is it the hip? Is it the ribs? Is it like, well, I don't know.
That's a hard one. That's a hard one, man. Falls, it all kind of depends on how you fall. You know, in the extreme situation, the largest or the highest fall investigation I ever did was that Metron case, where five workers fell from the swing stage, four workers died, okay, and one worker survived, and they fell from the 13th floor of a building.
You survived with no injuries or?
Oh, massive injuries. But in that case, the four fell and died. Then the fifth one, when he fell, he kind of got wrapped up in the mesh of the swing stage, so that kind of brought him down a few stories from the 13th.
And then slowed him down
a bit. And then when he fell, or the rest of his fall, he landed on top of his buddies.
Yeah. So his buddies saved him.
His buddies were dead.
Yeah, but they cushioned. It's a lot easier to land on a body.
Yeah. So usually, that was a crazy case. And, you know, falling 13 stories is falling 13 stories. But this guy survived. Four of them died. And when I went to go interview him on the first time, his whole body was in a cast.
He broke in that many bones?
Yeah, you know when you see on TV, like the guy's in the hospital like this? Yeah, that's how he was.
Wow.
Yeah. But 6 months later, you know, he's in a wheelchair. A year later, he was already walking with a cane, or probably two canes.
Well, I mean, that's the upside about a human body. It can't heal itself. But the thing is, how about we just avoid that?
Avoiding is probably your best situation.
Right. I'm just thinking, like, let's just talk simply. Like, Christopher Reeve had a small fall.
Yeah, he fell off a horse, right?
Yeah. And quadriplegic, right?
Yeah.
And then also Liam Neeson's wife went skiing and she hit her head.
Yeah.
And yeah. What is it, a day later or half a day later, she was gone.
I did an investigation once where a worker fell 4 feet from a ladder. And what ended up happening was...
4 feet?
4 feet from a ladder. And when he fell, he ruptured his spleen. And he didn't know his spleen was ruptured. He just felt the pain. And then a couple hours later, he passed out from the internal bleeding. And then he went to the hospital. He was in a coma. And 2 weeks later, died as a result of that fall from 4 feet.
He just felt the pain?
Yeah, he landed on something and, you know, he's in pain. And it burst. And yeah, and it was bleeding or burst cut. I don't know.
You wouldn't know. I guess would you, but you wouldn't even check because there would be bruising.
The bruising wouldn't show up for a while, right? So this guy fell, and then 45 minutes later, he passed out. So
that's what I'm trying to say, is that even if you fall, go get checked. Because you never
know. Depending on how you fall, right? You know, have you ever fallen off a ladder?
Yeah.
Right? So...
like a six-foot ladder.
Sure.
Where it wasn't fully extended, I went on, and all of a sudden, it just got its loss of balance, and I went down. Yeah, but you go down, and then... but I'm younger. So you go down and you try to save yourself, right? So I was fortunate enough that I didn't sprain, I didn't break, I didn't hit my head. Yeah,
yeah,
that was
it. And this is crazy too, but in construction, like in low rise and stuff like that, like I've done investigations where guys have fallen, but they're lucky. They either fell into a pile of snow or they fell into some soft mud and they just got back up and went right back to work.
Back in my early 20s, I used to be a muralist and painting murals, and mm-hmm. we were painting murals in gymnasiums, and we didn't have a scaffold, and we had to still paint, mm-hmm. so we ended up using the bleachers as a scaffold, the vertical, unopened bleachers, exactly, right? So I'm painting away on this thing, I lose my footing, I trip and fall, and I'm like, oh shit, because this is about 8 feet tall, right? Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, my shoe catches the seat of the bleacher. So now I'm suspended upside down, literally inches away from the ground.
Wow.
So I stopped, right?
Yeah.
Great. Then my shoe rips and I land hard on my shoulder.
Ouch.
Fractured my collarbone. Six inches away from the ground, my body weight at the time, probably $150, $160. And I, 6 inches crack, hit my shoulder, protruding bone,
yeah.
X-ray.
Yeah, no.
It could have been far worse if I went and I didn't get caught by the shoe. But yeah, that was just my
stupidity. Yeah, it falls is a tricky one, man. You know, people fall, get right back up. Amazing.
That's the first thought.
Yeah. Well, and with no injuries, right?
And yeah, then you pat yourself off and...
people have fallen walking up the stairs and, you know, broken an arm. That's a hard question to kind of narrow down. But falls is definitely the number one killer of workers.
And it's different... it's as you get older.
Oh yeah, well, your body, you know, you ever see like baby falls from a 6-story window or 3-story window, no injuries, right?
Yeah.
And then I guess as you get older,
the old man walking, and almost, that's what they say, hip injury, right? Like it's devastating.
Dude, the other day I was plugging in my iPhone charger, I pulled my back. Like I couldn't move for like 2 hours.
Litigation against iPhone?
No, not at all. Just old age, I guess.
So other than that, so I guess ladders and platforms, roofs, staircase up and down.
Well, hey, listen, even any stairs that are on a job site, if they have an open end, they're required to have a railing. So a railing is just a guardrail, just this direction instead of this direction.
If the staircase are, what's the standard width on a construction staircase? Is it 3 feet still? The width of the staircase?
Dude, I guess it depends on the custom staircase and...
but if it's space. A construction stair. You know, we always make construction stairs, right?
Oh, yeah. So just the temp stairs.
Yeah. So what's the minimum width? 3 feet? I just assume 3 feet.
I would
say
less.
You think less than that? Mm-hmm. I've seen some stupid ladders. You know, the 2x4 ladders, right?
I've never actually took a measuring tape to it, but I've seen some narrow ones. Well,
minimum code-wise for a staircase in a residential dwelling is
36 inches. Yeah, but that's permanent stairs.
Yeah, so construction stairs, though, you have to move stuff up and down, and
I've seen stairs like this. That's 2.5 feet.
And that's fine? Okay. As long as it has a railing.
Yeah, listen, you want your stairs to be well constructed and designed. Now, off the top of my head, I can't remember if there's a section in the regulations that deals with stair design. I don't...
There is for the code for the finish.
There is even for ladders when you design a wood.
I don't know. Is there?
I might have to open up the book on that one.
I'm assuming they would have figured out what the max rise and max tread, the max width. We know what the railing is, and they would have to be three: top, middle, and the bottom
for a guardrail.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there must be a max, min max rise and tread.
Sounds like I'm going to be doing some homework.
I bet you any money there has to
be. I'm just focused on whether or not the stairs are there.
That's true. Or what I have a problem with sometimes is what they make a stair, construction stair, with just whatever's hanging around. So now you got a 2x6 on one tread, you got a 2x8 on another tread. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Balanced. No, now you can't walk. And you're carrying material.
No, for sure. Hey, listen, construction is dangerous. Fall hazards are anywhere that's above 8 feet, right? And you can be on a ladder, you can be working on a floor, you can be working on a scaffold, you can be on a work platform. There's fall hazards everywhere, right? Even those jerry-rigged situations where you see the electricians, you know, they have to change a light bulb up here or install something here, so they'll stick some planks across the railings and then they'll put a ladder on top.
Smoke detectors. Yeah, I know.
Right?
That's the classic one.
That is the classic one. And have workers die that way? Yep.
Why are there so many more videos on Instagram and social media these days of guys taking two separate ladders or even sometimes three separate ladders to configure? It's almost like a snake and ladder game. I don't understand
this. It's on-site engineering, man. You know, like you don't have the tools, or maybe a tool's not even created for you to reach where you got to go, or, you know, budget constraints or whatever it may be. And then you're stuck with, as a worker, this is the tools and the equipment my boss sent me. I'm here on site. Obviously, my boss didn't realize that I have to go all the way up there. How the hell am I going to get up there? And the question is always, the law will tell you, well, ask your employer, ask your supervisor. They'll explain, they're required to explain how to do it. Fair. What ends up asking my supervisor, he says, oh, go get some planks and put your ladder there and shut up and go.
Yeah, but that doesn't meet.
No, it doesn't, Manny. But the reality is right now, you know, it's people are willing to take more risk, unfortunately.
It's a wild, wild west.
Right? You want to keep a job?
That's the other thing, because a lot of people are not working. I'll get somebody else for $2 less.
Less?
We complain about employees taking off for a dollar or two. Employers will probably hire somebody else for a dollar or two less.
I was having this conversation actually with a company the other day, the CEO of the company. And I go, listen, this is an employer's market now. Before, yes, it was a worker's market. Yes. The worker can demand, they can make the jobs, this money, pay. Now it's not like that, right? Now it's an employer's market. And now you get to pick and choose the workforce that you want. Right? So it's a little tricky. Anyways, let's jump into this.
Ooh, that's a devastating picture.
Oh, no, it's a video.
That's a video.
Jeez. That's a video. So the construction regulations, regulation 213/91, section 26 is the beginning of the fall protection section inside the regulations.
Okay.
So it talks about falling more than 3 meters.
And that's almost 10 feet, man.
That is 10 feet.
Okay.
10 feet. 1.2 meters if the work area is used as a path for a wheelbarrow or similar equipment. Yep.
You can roll a wheelbarrow in an area that's elevated 1.2?
No. So what they're saying is a guardrail would be required if you're working
above
a path of a wheelbarrow or similar equipment.
Got it. Okay.
If you can fall into operating machinery, then a guardrail is required. Okay, so the stipulations here are the height requirements and what protections you put in once you cross specific heights.
Got it.
So for a guardrail specifically, if you can fall into water or other liquid, then you need a guardrail system, regardless of the height.
Got it.
Right? You can be 3 feet up, but if I can fall into water and drown. So, falling into or onto a hazardous substance.
Whether that's dry or wet, doesn't matter. Anything hazardous, right? There's lots of corrosive materials, right?
Oh, who's working around, like, working above a corrosive material?
When I say corrosive materials, I'm talking about concrete powder, cement powder, mortar powders.
This one's a tricky one, man. I've never actually written that order.
Okay.
I could see that happening more in an industrial setting, even though this reg doesn't apply to industrial. But, you know, like I can see it, you working at some type of industrial facility where you can fall into a vat of liquid or something like that, or hazardous, substances. You know.
Yeah, okay.
Falling through an opening.
That's got to be the classic go-to, right?
What?
If there's always an opening that's not protected with guardrails.
Yeah, listen, there's a couple ways to address an opening. An opening can be, you can have guardrails all around it, or you can put a protective cover on it and adequately mark it and secure it.
True.
Right? So you can do that also. And then section 26.3, 2.4 meters for guardrails, floor, surface, or bridge. Actually, let me just go back here for a second. Falling more, and this regulation, these fall protection regulations, you got to read them very carefully, because the way they are written and then the way you interpret certain things, like yesterday when I was putting this together, I was reading and I was like, well, hold on a sec. So that requirement is for here and that requirement's for there. And, you know, you got to kind of go over it and play it through your head, how it's going to play out, like where, what the specs are exactly. So tying off is section 26.
Okay.
Section 26.3 is 2.4 meters for guardrails. So guardrails require to be at 8 feet when floor, surface, bridge, or roof, while formwork is in place, a scaffold platform or other work platform, runway, or ramp. So you need to be protected against falls. I know that's the face that a lot of people do.
But I don't understand. Yeah, that doesn't make any sense to me.
Right. So at 10 feet, you need to be protected against falls. But at 8 feet, you also need to be protected against falls with a guardrail system. So tying off and the methods of fall protection. I know. Ask your question.
It's just contradictory. I don't understand it.
Right. So if I'm at 8 feet.
Yeah.
Let's just say 8 feet. If I am at 8 feet, so I'm on the first level of a scaffold system.
Okay.
Give or take, because the scaffold system would be 8 feet.
Yeah.
Okay. Guardrails are required on that first level.
Yes.
For me to install a guardrail system at 8 feet, am I required to be tied off?
Yes.
Okay. So at 8 feet, if I am installing a guardrail system, I'm required to be tied off. Now, at 10 feet, you're also required to be tied off. I know. They got to make this a little bit more understandable.
That's a little open to interpretation, right? Like, depending on the scenario. And then the question becomes, what are you tying off to?
So you're looking at the methods of fall protection, right? So step number one, a guardrail system. And if it's not reasonably possible to install a guardrail system, then an alternate method of fall protection shall be used based on their hierarchy.
Have you ever issued a fine or summons or whatever to a worker who was assembling something that was not properly tied off?
Yes, a scaffold.
Okay, so they were assembling it and they weren't tied off.
Assembling or dismantling.
Yeah, so they weren't even tied off or anything. They didn't have anything on. They were just building the scaffold.
Mm-hmm.
But they would have had to have a harness on and tied off. And the question would be, where are they tying off to if they're erecting or dismantling?
So that one's always a tricky one.
See, it's in the gray area where do you want me to tie off to?
Well, the solution to that is to run a lifeline from the top of the house. Okay, bring the lifeline all the way down, connect your lifeline system, and start building your scaffold as you go up.
So you're in a structure, let's say. You're in a warehouse structure, and you're building a scaffold.
Okay.
As you're building that scaffold, you need to be tied off. Mm-hmm. So you have to get up there first to put your point to tie off.
Your anchor.
So when you're going up there,
you're not tied off.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
So technically speaking, the ministry can issue a ticket, a fine, for you going up there without being tied off. But you're going up there to put your point, your anchor point.
Yeah, yeah.
You got to have a little bit of forgiveness.
To be honest with you, the fall protection section should be simpler. It should be easier for workers to understand, right? And yes, I get it. It's law and it's written in a specific way. But I think there's a lot of, and if you look back at the history of fall protection, so a long time ago, fall protection was, you get a book from the CSAO or another place that offered fall protection. You read the book, and on the back of the book, it had a card that you cut out.
Yeah, I remember
you
that.
You put in your name, employer, and
you write it, you not even laminated.
No. And that was your fall protection card.
Yeah.
All right. The Metron case, the one that the swing stage, since that case, the recommendations from that case, there was an expert panel. They came up with a bunch of recommendations to improve health and safety. And one of the recommendations was working at heights.
Okay.
So from that Metron case, they mandated working at heights. Working at heights was created specifically to address fall protection issues. Right? So, you know, fall protection is working at heights is being trained. And again, to any worker that's working above these heights or at these heights and above. Yeah. Like if I'm a landscaper, why do I need fall protection training or working at heights? You know.
But if they're working on a pergola, if they're working on a cabana.
Yeah, no, the second you're up, you're up. Right?
Exactly.
The second you're up, it's you need it.
Yeah.
Right? But, you know, like you speak to workers and, you know, are you tied off? Yes. Great. Explain to me what system you're using. How is that connected? What's the anchor? What's the pound? What's the this? What's the that? And you can ask a million questions. When, you know, is this component supposed to be with this component? You can really go into super fine detail.
Yeah.
Right. But I think a lot of people in the workforce or on site, is the number one concern is, am I tied off? Or is that worker tied off? That's step one. You know, well, step one is probably organizing, planning, and making sure that the worker has the necessary equipment to do the job.
Yeah.
And then step two is making sure that they tie off. But I think a lot of people are still on that step one or that step two, where it's making sure workers are tying off. And I think that's the hardest one. And then you go into low-rise residential, you know, the carpenters, the bricklayers, the roofers, you know, no, I'll say it's a good 70% are tying off, right? Just tying off. You know, there's 30% that you'll catch not tied off. 3 out of 10.
Yeah.
You know? 2 out of 10, 3 out of 10 type deal. But even though they're tied off, the next question is their system set up in a way that's going to prevent them from hitting the ground?
That's the secondary one.
Right? Like, is that system?
You'd be tied off, but if it's loose, like how you've shown videos where they're tied off to each other. Sure, technically you're tied off, but if you do fall.
Yeah, so you need to be protected against falling, right? But again, you know.
So what's it going to take to rewrite this to make it simpler to understand that there's a point of setting up and dismantling that you cannot physically be tied off?
Listen, I think with the fall protection system, they try to accommodate multiple scenarios when they wrote it. And it's been around for a very long time. You know, and it keeps getting added and added and added. And
I still want to know who writes this stuff because I just get the sense that it's not tradespeople.
No, it's definitely not tradespeople.
It's lawyers, right?
Oh, well, it's a mix of groups that represent workers that have input into regulations, then along with the Ministry of Labor and labor groups. I don't know, man. It's a bunch of people.
Okay.
Right? But that being said, you know, falls are still the number one killer contravention. Right. And when to tie off. So 8 feet, 10 feet, 8 feet guardrail system, 10 feet, other methods of fall protection. But a guardrail is still the number one preferred. But that being said, you're installing a guardrail system. You still need to be tied off.
Right? See, that's the okay.
You know,
I get it.
If it's not reasonably possible to install a guardrail system. Right. And then when is it not reasonably possible to install a guardrail system? A pitched roof, for example. You're not going to install a guardrail system there.
No, you can't. But I've said it before on the show several times. I've said it whenever I have a roofer on this show. I think we need to have fixed anchor points on every single residential home.
100%. That should be part of the building code.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's not.
No.
Because that way a roofer can go up there and here's my anchor point. I guess the question becomes, when was the last time that anchor point has been inspected?
Sure. Then you're going to open up in terms of further questions and maintenance of that anchor point and stuff like that.
It's no different than you grabbing your harness and you're inspecting it.
Yeah, but I guess if you put it on the home, then the onus becomes on the homeowner.
Responsibility, yes,
right? True. So you're transferring that and there's an associated cost with that and da 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 da. But that was one of the recommendations on the Tony Dean panel, the expert panel after Metron, was to implement that into the building code.
Anchor point. And it got rejected?
It didn't go anywhere.
But it's such a good idea.
I think so. Because then you address all the roofers. You address, you know, anybody that's doing work on that home or has to go above, whatever.
See, I would even go even further. I would say you're right about the point about the homeowner now being fully responsible for that anchor point, and then the roofer, the worker, is entrusting the homeowner has done their work, right? That they've taken care of this. But I would go further that it should change in the framing code. I think the ridge of any peak roof should be solid material.
Yeah, yeah.
So now a roofer can go up there and they can pick any point of that ridge and put their anchor point on there.
Yeah, it might be something as simple as making sure that every 5 feet there's a solid steel plate, right, with an anchor popping out. that might be.
I think that's a
permanent
good idea.
Anchors. Yeah. Yeah, I don't see any reason why it shouldn't happen. But you know what's they're gonna say? Oh, that's an additional cost.
It's a cost transfer to the here. Right, I mean, they're already doing it with the extra LVLs and the extra steel and all this other stuff, but they don't do it on the pitch of the roof.
Yeah.
What do we have? We have 2x4. We have grade A 2x4 rafter engineered miter together. That's our roof.
Yeah, hey, listen, man, there are some ways that we can improve or reduce the number of fatalities in construction. There definitely is.
When was the last time you walked on a roof, a residential roof?
Like a flat roof or a pitch roof?
No, a pitch roof.
Oh, man. I don't know. 20 years.
Was it bouncy?
I don't remember.
It's always bouncy.
I'm sure there's some way in there.
Because it's only a half inch OSB at best. Mm-hmm. They're 2 foot centered rafters. I think these are, and they're designed just for snow load. That's all they're designed for. But every so often, you got to get workers up there.
Of course.
Whether that's someone to clean the eavesdrops, whether that's someone to inspect the vent stack, whether that's someone to install a skylight, you have to get a worker on there other than snow. And that's a worker that's walking on bouncing minimum code sheathing and rafters.
Yeah. No, I had a similar situation before the winter time in my house. A piece of siding had come off right at the top there, a piece of flashing.
At the gable or something?
Yeah. And so this guy showed up and he's like, oh, I'm going to go up there and I'll put it in. I got the piece already and this and that. I'm like, okay, cool. Are you going to tie off? Right? It was my first question.
Yeah.
You have a harness?
Legitimate question.
Right? I don't want you dead in my backyard. I don't want you dead at all, but you know what I mean. You can die in another person. Okay. Toss him over the fence. But he's like, no. I'm like, oh. And he's like, I got to go up there. I'm not tied off. This guy made perfect sense to me. He goes, I got to go up there and I'm not tied off. I'm going to install the anchor. I'm going to drill holes. I'm going to connect an anchor. I'm going to tie off. I'm going to perform probably 12 minutes of work up here.
Okay. You'll have to take an hour to actually prep it.
It's not about the time, but then he has to remove the anchor. Then he has to fix the holes. All right. So what did that do? Did that improve his safety? Sure. For those 12 minutes that he was tied off. Right, but he went up there, not tied off. He came back down, not tied off. What's the alternative?
You rent a boom for $1,000 for a day to do a 10-minute task.
Right. So this is where the issues with false starts coming in. You know, the psychology, the time, the production, the money, the budget. Right. This is where that starts to play in. You know, let's take a look at this video. Like, you know, in this case,
is this Toronto?
All of these videos are from Toronto.
Jeez.
You like that soundtrack, eh?
Okay, obviously Asia.
Why is that obviously? How did you get that?
It just looks like Asia. Even the tools not even tied off.
That should be the game, eh?
Tools are not tied off.
Guess this country. And
he's just walking on 2-inch pipe
and connecting it as he goes. I don't see a harness.
Wow, unbelievable,
right?
Well, now he's going to safety there. There's a little bit of a grid there, or what? Or
that's I don't know, man. It looks like he's stepping on him, but
I know, you know what, though? It's kind of funny how you see this today and you're thinking how dangerous that is, but we saw the 1930s and the videos from the, you know, yesteryears of skyscrapers being built in major cities.
Yeah, no, they're crazy.
And these guys were just monkeys climbing those pieces of steel, right? And no, not tied off. I mean, there were deaths and stuff, but
the question is, how many deaths?
I don't know.
You know what I mean? How many injuries? How many paralyzations? Right? Like, yes, well, we see those videos.
You're glorifying the classic scene on the I-beam of the workers having lunch.
Yeah.
You know that New York has a tourist attraction now for that.
I didn't.
Oh, you didn't know that?
They built
a beam, and then it elevates you up, and then it spins you around, and then you get a view of the city.
I bet you everybody's tied off.
No. No, wait. Are they?
Of course.
They have to be tied off.
Of course.
Yeah, they have to be tied off.
Secured, whatever it is. Right? So, yeah, we look at these old videos, and I've seen, and I know exactly which videos you're talking about. And, oh, look, man, men back then didn't tie off. And then, yeah,
but men died.
Where's the stats?
Yeah.
What are we talking about? 200? 300?
Listen, right? Every time I see the Burj Khalifa, I always just shake my head because the amount of undocumented workers that died during that project.
I don't know, man. Hey, listen, it really comes down to the what a country or a culture or society, the value that they place on life.
On life, yeah.
Right. True. I think that's the major difference. That's the psychological component there. You know, what's the value that if you live in a country where they don't care if you live or die, then that's it.
I got a suggestion here in Toronto in Canada. Why don't we reduce the development fees on projects and take that fee and put it towards safety?
So reducing the development fees means the city and the province is doing less taxes.
They're collecting less money for themselves, and they're putting that extra money that's being removed from the development fees into better safety.
No.
They'll never do it.
No.
But I'm just saying that's the practice.
Even with homes now, you know, I see a lot of these things on Instagram. The city needs to reduce their fees for this and fees for that and red tape and bureaucracy and this and that.
Okay. Yeah, they stop collecting when they're wasting. But my point is that if we want to make better and safer job sites, we need... Do you not agree scaffold should be all around the house when you're re-roofing a house? The UK way of doing things.
Scaffold should be all around the house.
Scaffold erected around the whole perimeter of a house to re-roof that house. I agree with it. That's the way it's done there.
But why?
No falls. You're working off a scaffold, you go right onto the roof. You're completely protected.
Yeah, but you got to build that scaffold. And while you're building that scaffold, you're exposed to falls.
But they have companies that exclusively just do that. So they build the scaffold. So now the workers can go up and down the scaffold, work from the scaffold, and re-roof that roof.
It definitely makes things a lot safer for those roofers.
But the cost associated with that here in Canada. Of course. All we see are just ladders that are probably 20 years old, bent. You know,
no, hey, listen, my clients, we find a damaged ladder, it's out of service right away.
Yeah,
right?
You put it to the curb, and guess what?
No,
Joe Schmo picks it up.
No, we break it. It's like electrical cords, we cut them. But
you can splice cords together.
I know you can.
With Moretz, you can make it in a Christmas tree, and you can hammer out the dent in the ladder.
I guess so. Hey, there's always a way to salvage things, right? But a lot of this comes down to unnecessary risk. A lot of this comes down to, you know, like you get in your car and you put on your seatbelt. That second nature is not always the case for the worker, right? The worker's there, they have the equipment, and sometimes they just forget, or sometimes I'm just going there for 2 seconds. You know, there's a variety of reasons for it. And then if you look at the employer side, I know it could be the employer just doesn't care if you have working at heights training and doesn't care if you don't have a harness. In that Metron case, that's exactly what happened. Right, the employer didn't give a shit about these workers. So, you know, but if the employer does give a shit about these workers, you know, I got some companies that their workers are using a method of fall protection 98% of the time.
Okay.
Right, whether it's a guardrail, whether it's a harness, whether it's this, whether it's that. So these workers are already accustomed. They already know, they're already in a routine, they're already in a rhythm, they know what needs to go where, they have processes in place because they're doing it so much, right? But also because their employer is on top of them, right? Their supervisors are making sure.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the disconnect starts happening. Supervisors that aren't making sure. Supervisors that, oh, yeah, I'll turn a blind eye to this and I'll turn a blind eye to that, right? And that stuff, I think, psychologically, it spreads where you have one guy on your crew that, you know, is not following all the rules, or maybe his level of safety isn't, or his or her level of safety is not the same as yours. And, you know, the supervisor lets it go. Then everyone's like, well, if this guy's not getting in trouble for not being tied off or not wearing his hard hat, then I'm not going to do it. Right. So it kind of tends to spread a bit, psychologically speaking.
I agree.
So, you know, this one's still the number one killer, but this one's the number one killer also because of stupid decisions by people. Right? I'm not going to tie off. I don't want to tie off. Oh, it makes no sense. Oh, if I'm going to, you know, all the lifeline is more of a tripping hazard than anything else. Suddenly you hear that.
Yeah, I know. Right? I've heard it so many times.
All right. So 26.1 sub 2, methods of fall protection, guardrails, top, mid, and kick plate, travel restraint. And what travel restraint is it allows you to reach the edge but not go over. All right. So that works like the seatbelt in your car.
Got it. Okay.
Okay. Fall restricting. It allows you to fall, but you can't fall more than 2 feet.
Hey, I broke my collarbone with 6 inches, man. So.
Yeah, but falling more than 2 feet versus a fall arrest system, which is designed to stop you can slow fall. You
down. Yeah.
Okay. Right? And then it's designed to stop you from hitting the ground. And then you have safety nets. I've never actually seen a safety net used for fall protection.
For ball? No, they use it for material protection.
Yeah, I've seen them in that situation. But using it as a fall protection.
They do for bridge work. No, they don't.
Don't you remember last summer? Wasn't a guy that fell from the Gordie Howe Bridge and he fell all the way home and they had to go rescue him? And
who did I read so recently that they, or was it that, I can't remember. There was a bridge that was being built and they implemented the safety net and it saved hundreds of workers' lives. That was lives.
San Francisco. That's when
was the that first the Golden Gate?
That was yeah,
the
very that first was one. The first
designed, first I think the engineer designed it as part of it.
Yeah.
And that net saved hundreds of workers' lives.
Yeah, it caught so many workers that had fallen.
It's not a bad idea on regular high rise.
I know, but what this implies is that you have a high rise, right? And then you don't need guardrails because you have a safety net sticking out like this. So then they'll just remove all the guardrails. I think that's
I think that's worse because now people are just putting too much faith in something that's.
I wouldn't want to fall 3 stories and land in a safety net and then trust that safety net to actually not fall apart.
Yeah.
Okay. You know what I mean? Safety net is probably the one that, well, not probably, it is the least used and probably the least effective.
I agree.
You know what I mean?
Is this another video?
Yeah.
Oh, what's going on? This is Toronto.
No. Look at the mountains in the back. Look at the mountains.
There's mountains in Scarborough.
it's Blue Mountain. What happened here?
Well, it's always B, so it's got to be North American, right? Nobody else other than North American uses OSB. What's this guy doing?
Where do you think he's going, Manny?
Oh, no way.
Where do you think he's going?
Really? No bro, way.
Those loud. That's
no way. What the?
Oh, luckily, he's wearing running shoes. Otherwise, that'd be really hard.
Did you get the MyS1 app already going on where you can put the. I was impressive that he climbed it. Dangerous and stupid. Or right? Stupid and dangerous.
Like, what's the purpose of taking that risk? And I get it. I take risks, but they're calculated. I would never take that risk. What did he save? A minute?
It made no sense.
Zero sense.
Whatsoever.
But you look at the workers up there too. None of them are tied up.
The only thing good about that video is his open web framing. I love open web framing, man. So friendly for mechanical services.
Oh.
I love that.
So that's obviously not here.
It's got to be BC or something. I don't know. Okay, yeah, the mountain is.
Right? So
but that was stupid. That was totally stupid. He could have slipped. And then lost his balance and went right down. Done.
Do you know for what? So that he didn't have to get out of his machine, walk inside the house, and go up the climb up the
stairs.
If there's stairs,
that's true,
right? Or a ladder, but stairs is preferable. But you know, like this highlights just dumb human decisions.
Here's a question for you because I don't know this. I should actually probably ask Edge One. If a hydraulic cable were to burst, does it collapse on itself?
That's a good question. Because
it's fully, it's extended on
three. I would say yes.
I'm assuming that it would collapse.
I would say yes.
So if it does, and I've seen that too, while machines are working, I've seen cables snap and open up and you got fluid going all over the place.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming if you got a boom arm like that and it's fully extended and you lose the hydraulic pressure and he's on it, I don't know. That's a machine.
Yeah, that's another worst case scenario, right? That's another variable.
Somebody who's operating these machines can tell me if that happens or if that's going to happen. But it was either way, it was stupid.
Beyond stupid.
Yeah.
Like you know, if these are my workers, I'm an employer and I see my worker doing this, right? Like, you know, I would definitely question whether or not I want this worker working for me.
Because what if he does that and gets away with it, what's he going to do tomorrow and get away with?
Well, yeah.
Until you don't get away with it one day.
You know what I mean? Like, am I going to risk my entire business because of this guy? That's how I look at it. I think that's how employers should look at it.
That's a good point.
Right? Am I going to risk my entire business because of the types of choices that this individual makes? No. I would fire this guy on the spot right there. Boom, gone. But what happens? I need a forklift operator. He's the only one I got. So instead of firing him, we're going to have a conversation, right? And that's fair too. Maybe you have the conversation, the issue is resolved, and they don't do it again. But you know, there is a psychological component to this. You know, and there is
responsible.
What?
Everybody's responsible.
Well, yeah, but ultimately, you know, like I tell my kids, you know, who moves your mouth? You do. Who moves your hands? You do.
Yeah.
Right? And ultimately, it's the same for a worker. You walk out there and there's no guardrails. You have a choice at that moment to make.
Speak up, ask, request it, get the guardrails going on.
Right?
It's true. And there aren't even any guardrails but there, too, by the time you get up there,
right? No. There's zero. There's zero fall protection going on here. But, you know, like, you speak up. But even that, there's a risk to speaking up.
Yeah, because you can get fired and replaced. By the next,
which legally you're not, that's called reprisal, and that's illegal to do.
Go ahead, the worker can go in.
Right. So, you
know, then the employer can go, look, oh, here's a video of him doing this. That's why I let him go.
Yeah. I don't know, man. You know, workers get put in these different situations. You know, my boss told me to go up there and get this. Okay. But you have working at Heights training? Yeah. Okay. Do you have a harness? Yes. Where's your harness? Downstairs in the truck. Okay. Why wouldn't you go downstairs?
Grab it.
And get your harness. Oh, man. Phil, I was just going up here for just to grab this, right? I was just going to go do this and da 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 da.
What did Tim say? What did he call it? What is it?
I don't know. Something-itis.
No. He had it like it only take a second or it only take a... Well, I can't remember.
I can't remember either. But there's, you know, it's
dangerous.
Crazy, man.
Stupid, dangerous. Don't do it. Figure out another way to do it.
Right.
Simple as that.
But again, you know, it's the employer's responsibility to ensure.
But the employer could educate, the employer could reprimand, the employer can do all the things. But at the end, like you said, it's the worker.
Yeah, you got to make a choice. Sooner or later, when it comes to safety as a worker, you're in that moment, you need to make a choice.
Yeah.
Are you going to say something or are you going to roll the dice?
Yep.
And if you roll the dice, what are the risks? What are the probabilities? Right? That's what it really comes down to. And then even with fall protection and different scenarios, like, you know, you'll get the roofers and they got bump lines and stuff like that. So there's no guardrail. They're not tied off, but they have a bump line.
What's a bump line?
Oh, the little lines with the flags on it, with the weighted posts. Never seen those?
Oh, I've seen them. That's what they are?
It's called a bump line.
How is that supposed to stop a body from...
It doesn't. It's not designed as a method of fall protection.
That's a psychological thing. You're peripherally seeing this and thinking that you're safe.
No, it's the bump line is not offering protection. So the bump line is usually 6 feet from the edge, right? So back. And what the bump line is a visual indicator. Beyond this point, fall protection is going to be required, right? But that only applies, it's only found in the construction regulations in the roofing section. So technically, only the roofers use bump lines or required or supposed to use
bump lines. So what happens when you got to do the roof past the bump line?
Then you tie off.
So what's the point of putting the bump line on? You're eventually going to take that area and it has to be roofed.
And this is the different groups have different challenges. Now, I'm an HVAC company. I have to go replace an air conditioning unit on a building. And this building, let's say, is 30 stories high.
So they stay away from the bump line. I get it.
They don't even have a bump line. They'll just walk onto the roof. The roof is massive. In any direction is 30 feet, let's say, to an edge. Do I need to tie off? I'm 30 feet away from that edge.
Do you? No?
Technically, yes.
You still have to tie off even though you're in the center?
The way the regulations are written is as long as the worker has access to an open edge, a method of fall protection shall be
used. And if there's no guardrail, there's no nothing, then you have to be tied off.
Right. So on some of these buildings, what you'll see is a walkway. You get up onto the roof, you open the door, and you'll have a walkway that has guardrails. And it'll direct you around that roof.
Now you're in an open area though, and you're 30 feet away from the edge. Technically, you still need to be harnessed.
Technically, you need to be protected.
See, I disagree with that.
I know. So how do you write a regulation that has so many different scenarios, right? And this is why I think the fall protection section is overly complicated, because they're trying to appease all these different scenarios. So you got roofers with bump lines, you got guardrail systems, and I can't install a guardrail systems, then I need another method of fall protection. Right. And then you start getting into types of fall protection, types of travel restraint system. And you could get down a really big.
But this is Toronto. They build the same square box in every single job site.
Right?
And every floor is the exact same except for the first and the last.
No.
Because the last has all the mechanical stuff and the first has all the entrance stuff. Right. Mm-hmm. But in between the sandwich, every floor is exactly the same. And it's a box. We don't creatively create some structures that you magically need to come up with different scenarios to solve situations. Listen,
a lot of these are repeat scenarios.
Yeah.
A lot. Like the carpenters face the same fall hazards all the time. The bricklayers face.
That's why they love that job, because they come in and they go, listen, we got 50 floors. We're making cake.
Yeah.
Every single floor.
No, for sure.
Exactly. They'll be more efficient by the last one.
I think high rise is probably easier to control falls than it is in low rise.
I agree. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's custom. It's a lot of custom. This is what the roof design is. This is what the floor is. This is the overhang. This is whatever.
I think, you know, like the most obvious fall hazards, I'm on the 17th floor of a building and there's no guardrails all around that perimeter.
Yeah.
Like that's an easy one, right? I think, and again, this is just based on my experience. I think when you get into the more complex stuff, not complex, but not as a more unique fall hazards, such as the one we were talking about, you know, you got to change the smoke alarm in a two-story or three-story home and you got to kind of jerry-rig something and this and that. I think that's where it gets messy.
Yeah, but I've had the arguments with homeowners too, explaining to them that I need to bring a lift in here. I need to set up a scaffold. They don't want to pay for it.
No.
Can't you just get a ladder and just lean it up and then try to reach behind you to get to there? No.
Yeah. Listen, same thing as the guy that came to fix the flashing in my house.
Same idea. All right. Next.
Next.
This guy.
There we go. So we're going to watch this video in a second. This one, I went on a bit of a rabbit hole yesterday trying to find some stats and information when it came down to fatalities and injuries and fatalities as fall related and stuff like that. So I was on the MOL website, Google, obviously doing some searches, finding some things here and there with WSIB website. It's kind of hard to find some of this information.
Yeah, you figure they would make it easy.
You got to dig. So this is what we found. For 2023, we had 16 fatalities in construction. These are traumatic fatalities. It's not
2023?
Count. Yeah. 16.
Okay.
It's and then if you keep on looking down, well, you know, 18, 24.
I got a few grains of salt here. I don't know about that number. I don't trust that number.
Well, this is based on WSIB stats.
Yeah, so that's why undocumented people, listen, drop them off with their running shoes on. That whole mentality.
Oh yeah, there's definitely a portion of the demographic that this does not capture.
So it's obviously, according to them, gotten better over the years because I've seen the numbers increase as we go back in time.
Yeah, in terms of fatalities, traumatic fatalities. So you got two types of fatalities. You got traumatic fatalities, and then you have occupational disease. So something that's prolonged. I've been exposed to cancer and then due to this and that, exposed to cancer and exposed to chemicals that cause cancer. Right? So that's what we have for traumatic fatalities. Out of those 16, how many were falls? I'm not sure.
But falls are still number one.
Falls are still
probably a large portion of those are falls.
Yeah, I would say at least four.
Okay.
Maybe more.
Okay.
Right? But again, I'm guessing. I would love to find more information that we can share.
I would wish the government just puts it out there. I'm like, I'd rather just rip the Band-Aid. Just let everybody know the truth.
Yeah, and listen, even with the stats and the data, it's usually like a year behind.
Yeah, right?
So I couldn't find anything for 2024.
Okay. No, you're not going to find it until 2026.
I did find, so the Ministry of Labor does release information to some of these labor management groups. So they'll give like a monthly summary. So January 2024, this is what we've done so far. You know, February, this is how many criticals, this is how many. So they do release some of this information, but it's not to the public. Now, do they make that information public? Some of them do.
It should be because public's paying for it.
Yes and no, right? I need to keep in mind, WSIB is funded by the employers.
Overfunded.
Well, they're giving them back money, so that's always good. So I was digging. This includes 90 traumatic fatalities and 174 occupational disease fatalities. In addition, there were 12 fatalities recognized by WSIB in 2022 due to COVID-19.
You want to explain that one to me?
a worker contracted COVID and in died. The workplace and died, and WSIB recognized that as a death in the workplace. So keep in mind, WSIB is an insurance company. And just like any insurance company, these guys have a lot of stats. These guys have a lot of data. These guys understand risk. They understand probability. They make these calculations, and human lives is just a number to them.
My mound of salt is growing.
I know. But okay. It's true. It's the, how an insurance company looks at the people that they're insuring.
Okay.
Right? And then critical injuries. This was 2022, 2023, I believe. So in construction, we had 417 critical injuries.
Industrial would encompass what?
Industrial is anything that's not construction, healthcare, or mining. So you can, a store at Yorkdale Mall is an industrial facility. A factory is an industrial facility.
They're the same class?
Yeah, it's just industrial. It's just quantified as industrial. Okay, all right. Construction is construction.
Okay.
Right? A construction project. Healthcare is healthcare. Mining is mining.
How does healthcare have almost as many as construction?
That's a good question.
Like, what's going on in healthcare then? I don't understand.
I don't know. Again, these are just critical injuries. This is not LTIs.
I know, but these are healthcare workers.
Yeah.
And they're so close to construction workers.
That's
where
that's,
are they having these injuries in healthcare?
I don't know. Not my forte, to be honest with you, but I'm guessing.
Anybody wants some salt? I got lots of salt here, man.
Like, I'm guessing cow. Slips, trips, falls. I don't know. Maybe.
In my opinion, mining seems low.
Right?
Mining? That's a really dangerous environment.
Yeah. You'd think so, but maybe it isn't.
Okay.
And don't get me wrong. There's a lot of safety that goes into mining.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's why that number.
And again, mining may not have the same challenges as construction, for example, such as illegals and, you know, dropping guys off at the hospital and kicking them out the door type deal. I don't think it's that easy to do in mining. But these are critical injuries, right? These are notifiable injuries to the Ministry of Labor. When there's a critical, a worker gets critically injured, and there's a definition, we'll cover it on another episode. But when a worker gets critically injured, you're required by law to notify the Ministry of Labor. Right? So this is 417 criticals chalked in 2022-2023.
Okay.
Again, Google, snapshots.
Why is the year split? Why is it part of 2022?
Because they don't have a January to December. They do April to April type deal. Why? I think. I don't know. That's what I'm guessing.
Why would they do that?
Okay. I don't know, man. They released this data.
I ask why anything is associated with government.
And I might be wrong. It could be, but like this is the information and how we found it. This is how they classify it from the 2022 to the 2023 year. I don't know.
What's going on with the video here? What do you got, a guy up there on the top? What's going on?
Yeah, just a little, see what happens to your body.
What's the music going on in this one?
I don't know.
Whoa. Whitecap used to do that all the time at the trade shows. They had the fall arrest simulation.
Yeah.
Fall from 20 feet.
That's about 20. That's more than 20
feet. Yeah, and they showed it, right?
Yeah.
And that was always an eye-opener.
Let's see it again, man. I like this one. That's a lot of force being applied to that system and to your body.
Yeah.
Right? And in some of these cases, you'll see, just like the seatbelts, bruises, cracked ribs, you know, marks from the harness on your legs and stuff like that. But again, way better than hitting the ground.
It is. I don't dispute that. The one that I do dispute is if a Zoom Boom falls over and you're tied off.
Yeah, see, that's another scenario, right?
Like that I've always disagreed with. I think you'll be safer if it's falling down.
Okay, let's play it up.
So you're not tied off and the Zoom Boom loses its balance or whatever. You parked it in the wrong
position. Okay, but hold on a sec. Is it moving?
No, it's in a fixed position.
Okay, so how does it lose its balance?
I'm just saying if it's finished fixed position and it starts to go now. So now you're in the bucket and it starts to go. If you're tied off, you're going wherever that bucket's going and you're going to slam and you're tied in. So obviously you're going to get strung from the boom, the bucket, and hit the ground. But if you're going down and you're not tied off, you can jump off and away from the boom.
So these scenarios have come up before. And
if the scissor lift is fully extended vertically. Okay, some of these scissor lifts, especially the smaller ones, it only takes like 250 pounds of force laterally to knock it over.
That's all it takes?
200, oh, wow. 300, depending on whether it has outriggers, depending. But if it's the smallest scissor lift possible and that thing's fully extended up, if you go look at the manufacturer's instructions, lateral force to knock it over, you're looking at 250 pounds, 300 pounds, maybe wow. 400 pounds.
Okay.
Give or take. So I'm in a scissor lift. It's fully extended. It has guardrails. I am tied off inside. If you start stepping on the mid rail,
it's different.
The guardrail is mute and point, and you better be tied off. You better not step on the guardrail.
So if it falls over and you're tied off, is that worse than not being tied off?
Now it comes down to the scenario, the situation, and what? How do you respond? Like me, you know, like hindsight and investigations and stuff like that, I would probably tuck in.
No.
I know. You see something happen. I don't know.
Would be jumping.
One thing's for sure. There have been cases where workers have been secured or tied off inside the elevated work platform. That thing has fallen over and they've been killed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right? But again, it's the known risk with that type of machinery and equipment. No one's saying ban elevated work platforms the way they say about ladders. Oh, ban ladders. They're so unsafe.
If you have a machine or platform or boom or something and it's collapsing, your best option, in my opinion, is to be as far away from that machinery when it makes impact with the ground.
Yeah, but how? Where do you go? What do you do? Like,
no, you jump off at the very end. You jump off.
You know, I don't know, Manny. Sometimes it's like, you know, you see these people jumping out of a car or a train or some moving, you know, and like, well, if I was to do it, I would roll and I would tuck and I would do this.
It's hard to compare the two because in a moving vehicle at 50 kilometers an hour compared to a boomer or an elevated platform,
I know, but dropping is not. It comes down to reaction time.
It is reaction time. But I think the worst case scenario is if you're left in that bucket or in that guardrail platform and you hit the ground, you're going to sustain much more critical injuries than if you had the opportunity to jump away from it.
Yeah.
But I know that my thought of jumping away from it goes against everything the law says.
If
something hits it.
Something hits it.
Yes.
Right? It has to be something that hits it.
But you're thinking about, let's talk about a worker. A worker's tied in, moving the platform, gets to the position where they have to do the work. Now it collapses. You're better off, in my opinion, not to be tied off when it's collapsed.
Listen, yes, and no, I guess. I don't know, Manny. You know, it's case by case scenario. It's definitely, you know, more questions should be asked. Maybe some more tests should be done.
Well, I think we should be getting some dummies and just testing it out, sure, and seeing
maybe,
what is.
Maybe that's what they need to start doing, right?
And I would volunteer the politicians as the dummies, right? I would put Manny, them in there. That's what I would do, right?
Oh, we're riding at dawn. I know, man. But, you know, some of these other fall issues are very simple ones, such as you have a guardrail system. You're 2 feet away from a guardrail system, and you go and set up your ladder right beside that guardrail. And then you're on top of your ladder. Why are you doing that face?
No, but what? Okay, you're talking about what?
Okay, so you got a square, right? Which, yeah. That's the floor. You have the guardrails here.
Yeah.
And I go and grab my ladder.
Oh, and you put the ladder inside there?
No, I just go put it close to the edge.
No, that makes sense. Okay. What do you mean? I don't understand.
Okay, front of the house, we have a window.
Yeah.
That window requires to have a guardrail system.
Yes.
I go put my ladder 2 feet or 1 foot away from that window because I got to do some work up here.
Yes.
Now I'm standing on the ladder and technically I am above the guardrail system.
Okay, I get it. Based on their, what are you talking about?
What are you talking about?
Okay, so you got a window. You got to get up to that
window.
We're
trying this out, man.
No, I'm trying to figure it out.
We're drawing it out.
Here.
Give me a piece of paper. All right.
We need a whiteboard.
We probably do for this class.
Get on. We got to wrap it up soon.
Okay. We have a floor of a building.
Okay.
This is a guardrail system here.
Okay.
Okay. Now we get a worker that needs to do some type of work. Let's say it's an electrician. Goes and sets up.
Oh, a ladder next to the guardrail. No. So now once he gets on top of that ladder, he needs another guardrail system that's supposed to go higher now.
Or tie off.
Or tied off.
True. Right, but this scenario where workers are placing a ladder close to a guardrail system.
Yeah, that's not.
And then they're standing on the ladder. Can you fall over the guardrail?
Of course system? You can. Right?
Next scenario, stilt.
Okay.
Right? They're making a bit of a comeback. You see them here and there.
Yeah, yeah.
What the law says is if you're using stilts, then you have to have a guardrail system that protects those workers.
So technically speaking, your guardrail needs to go higher to the new height that they've created for themselves.
Exactly. Right? So we're saying that the guardrail system needs to go to 42 inches technically from the ground, right? So 42 inches is your hip. 42 inches is your hip.
Yeah.
And basically,
but if you're adding a 42-inch stilt,
then you got to double up. You double up your guardrail systems, right? Does that ever happen? No. Right? But you're on stilts. How effective is that guardrail if you're on stilts right beside that guardrail?
Why don't we just implement the airbags? You see how China's got those airbags now for elderly
people? I don't want to fall 20 feet and then trust an airbag to go off. That's why.
Do you trust the airbag in your vehicle?
No. They got recalled.
I trust the seatbelt more than I do the airbag.
Toyota had the largest recall on airbags ever, man. Right? But these fall hazards are in a variety of scenarios. Some of these scenarios are created, right? Created by the worker. You know, we have a guardrail system, but the second I put a ladder beside it and I climb up that ladder, I have now created a fall hazard. Or the stilts one. That's too. That's another. The
stilts one's a classic. That's a good one. That makes sense. And plus,
but stilts used to be banned in Ontario.
I know they did.
Then they brought them back.
So, but now you got a lot of drywall. There's hanging drywall, mudding drywall, and there's staircase openings around those.
Oh yeah. Well, so, on stilts.
Yeah.
Oh
so, yeah. So now man. you got a standard 42, and you got your top, middle, and bottom rail. Moment you get onto a stilt, the top rail becomes your floor height.
No, the guardrail almost becomes a tripping hazard, man. You know what I mean? Like. You're at that height, and the guardrail only comes up to maybe halfway or three quarters on the stilt.
Well, you know what? With AI and stuff, all these workers are all going to be machines anyway. So if they fall, who cares?
Come on, Manny.
What's this? Workplace fatality results?
I didn't want to black this one out.
Okay.
So workplace fatality results in $130,000 fine for Concord Company. So January 17th. January actually a whole bunch.
Recent.
Yeah, that's when it was posted. Okay. So bear with me, I'll pull up the case here. Let's see the background here. Okay. August 31st, 2023, three workers employed by the company were installing a head wall, a wall of concrete with a hole near the middle of the frames, the outlet of a drainage pipe or culvert. Okay. As they attempted to fit the head wall to the pipe, the workers determined the excavation site was not wide enough to align the head wall, requiring further digging. To clear the area for digging, the excavator operator moved the head wall and placed it in an upright position. Workers removed the chain sling from the excavator boom and attached the digging bucket.
Leaving the head wall vertically, not tied off.
While excavating to fit the head wall, the excavator bucket contacted the head wall, causing it to tip and fatally injure a worker.
Wow.
Four Winds Construction Inc. failed as an employer to ensure the head wall was moved and stored in a manner that did not endanger a worker as required by Section 37.1.
And $130,000 fine.
Plus 25% victim surcharge fee.
I think it should be $1.3 million. I should be in charge of fines. $130,000 for that life.
Plus 25% victim surcharge.
Yeah, but that victim surcharge doesn't go to the family. Doesn't go to the
spouse. Oh, there's a victims fund. That's what I don't know what they use it for. Don't even ask
me.
I
know what they use it for. They use it for
No. Come on. Hopefully we're
okay, but it doesn't go to the worker.
They should give it all the threads of life.
And it exactly. It should be going. It should be a victim surcharge that goes to threads of life. That's what it should be.
I think so.
Right?
But at least some way to help families.
But it's still $130,000. That's, you know what? That's a brand new luxury vehicle today's economic time. That's what that is.
Yeah.
That just shows you how little that is for life.
Listen, what did we have the other day? A $200,000 critical. Yeah,
and it was still too low.
Right? So that's that one for today, man.
And that's kind of a win, so to speak. And it was a split second that you got there. All these guys didn't think, well, hang on a sec. Let's just put this concrete head wall vertically and let's not secure it.
Maybe it was leaning up against something. Man, the bucket hit it. And, you know, there's variables there, right? But based on what we're reading here, it wasn't secure.
That's right? The problem. And it just took 2 seconds for them to, like, just hold it there. Don't worry. How many times have you, I've done that several times with just putting a blocking and 2x4 and I'm like, and then I back away and grab whatever I need to grab to secure it and boom, it hits me in the head.
I
would have fined myself for that one situation, $130,000. You know what I'm saying?
But you were wearing a hard hat, so it hit you in the head.
No, I wasn't wearing a hard hat. That's why. I had a bump. I ended up getting a bump.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. No, I mean, it's devastating to hear that, to see that. And it happens all the time.
Well, there's some other ones. I found some. They're getting a little, I'd say the fines on average are slowly starting to go up.
I want to hear about the first one that's going to get $500,000 for a repeat.
That's we won't talk about that for the next 2 years.
That's true, because you need to.
You need to strike
one. Unless you got a really bad company that just does one and then another and then another in the same year.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so. Right?
Okay. All right. That was a good show.
Oh,
Falls. Are we going to talk about collapse, trench collapse?
We can do another episode. We'll do an episode.
We can do all the top ones, right?
Yeah. One thing's for sure, though, just kind of to wrap up falls. Workers, you need to take care of yourselves first. You need to make sure that your employer provides you the equipment necessary. You need to make sure that they fully explain to you how, when, where, and why, and what when it comes to fall protection. You know, if you see something, there's a hazard, there's guardrails missing, you see a buddy not tied off, say something, man.
Speak up.
Speak up. I know it's tough. I know you might get in trouble. I know it's, you know, might get side eye, or you might get praised and thanked, depending on what kind of employer you're working for, right? But say something, because again, falls, it's not a pretty thing, and none of it is, but it's not a...
I'd even go as far as speak up and make sure your phone is recording.
This comes back down to social media. Should you, as a worker, cover your own ass a bit? And my employer said this, my employer didn't do that.
If something happens, that worker is going to get investigated.
Yeah. He could also be charged.
Did you see anything? Yeah. Remember you talked about how you could be compliant to it, to like, you actually contributed to this because you didn't say anything.
It could be. Yeah, man. It's case by case scenario, right? But one thing's for sure, you know, it starts with the workers on site. You know, to speak up and say these specific items. They don't watch
each other's back.
That's what it really comes down to these days, man. You know, watch your back, head on a swivel, and, you know, watch out for your coworkers, your buddies, your friends. You're like, you know, speak up or say something, man. But, you know, unfortunately, we're still going to have fatalities, and it's just part of the nature of the business, man.
Until it's all robots, man. Then there won't be fatalities.
Are we doing our next episode on robots?
I don't know. Robots are coming. They're coming to construction.
It's coming hard and fast.
Yeah. So, I mean, and it's going to be a question of, like, how expensive is that robot? And what's the cost of a human life compared to that robot?
No. It's a robot, man, for sure. But, you know, we were having this conversation the other day, and we went down a rabbit hole a bit about robotics and AI and processes for designing and building and construction and how they can just switch the processes. And you can eliminate 70-80%. And then, you know, the theories is maybe everything that's happening now is being designed and done on purpose so that they can destroy the workforce and replace the workforce.
That's interesting.
That's a deep rabbit hole, that's for sure. But, you know, like, did you see that the report that came out or that news article? 61% sales drop in new home condos. There's 22,000 condos.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. If I were to design the robots, I would paint them in national colors and then give the voice the same accent that belongs to those national colors.
So you'd have a Portuguese robot going down with a heavy Portuguese accent. Hey, can I?
I would have failures at the joints for the Italian robots.
Come on, Manny.
We got to replace his arms again. Vito's talking too much.
Oh, my
God. I would totally do that. I think that'd be hilarious.
Hey, man. We got to bring some more Italians on the show, man. They're feeling underrepresented. Underrepresented. They're feeling
all right, if Elon's listening, guys, man, start painting them in national colors, and that's it, man. That would be. They look like soccer teams, you know, football, coming onto the field. Seriously, there'd be, here comes the crew.
I know, we're joking, but
it's coming.
When it happens,
I'm sorry, it's coming.
There's going to be a lot of people at home.
And if it's not happening at the factory, I guarantee you that the human workers that are on site are going to be spray painting these robots in their colors. I guarantee you.
You know, one thing's for sure. I'm teaching my kids and I'm hoping that they really get into engineering and robotics and building robots and fixing robots.
Because that's what we need.
Well, we don't need any of it. We don't need robots for anything. But
no, the engineering portion of it. We need people.
By the sounds of it, this
machinery. Is what, we need to figure out better machinery.
If you want to be employed, this might have to be one of the very few paths, right?
Humans are going to be catering to robots and machines.
I'll never cater to a robot.
That's going to be the work available. If the robots are replacing construction workers, I'm talking about just mainstream construction.
Did you watch that movie with Megan Fox?
No, on I didn't Netflix? Watch that. I can't stand her. She's not she's talentless, man.
Oh, fair, but the premise of the movie.
Yeah, I get it. That's the premise, but it's just like I don't think any sane husband would choose that one. I was like, why?
Okay, but
I mean, like, give me the obese, ugly-looking robot to be the nanny in the house, man. That's what I would want.
What did Elon Musk say by 2030?
Robots? I believe it. That means he's going to Mars and a robot at the same time.
He's on a tear, that guy.
Well, he's going to be busy as of next week.
Doge.
It starts.
Can't wait.
We got to get out of here, man.
All right, Manny. Thanks a lot. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for following. Thanks for watching.
You're listening to Safety Corner, powered by TCL and S1. For workers, by workers. Online and in-person health and safety programs and training available in 10-plus languages. Reach out to them at www.mys1.ca and DM them at my_S1 for more information.